Well, what about the fiscal cliff? And what is the fiscal cliff, and how is that supposed to be activated in 2013?
Well, the fiscal cliff is, we have a whole series of different tax policies and budget policies which sunset at the end of the year. And if we don't take action, then we'll see automatic tax increases and automatic spending cuts, and in a way that could be quite shocking for the body politic. I'm working right now on an article on the fiscal cliff, because one of the things I want people to understand is we have, as in the world, we have a reality, you know, and then we have an official reality. One of the reasons to explore and try and understand reality is that's where solutions lie. If we have to stay within the official reality, we can't find real solutions because we can't see the real problem. And it's tempting to stay in the official reality because there's a lot of unanswered questions and uncertainty as to how reality really works. It's the same with the budget. We have fiscal reality, and then the budget covers a small portion of fiscal reality. And the problem is you can't balance the budget within the official budget because the game is rigged. So let me describe what I mean by that. The first thing is we spend money for different endeavors. We make an investment in going and conquering Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm not saying I agree with that policy, but we do it. And then all the assets that are seized as a result are not on budget. So the expense of going to war is on budget. The assets conquered are off budget and go to the benefit of a whole series of private parties.
Good point.
Okay. One of the reasons they say no, they belong to the Afghanis or the Iraqis, is so they can put them in a local development function and then, you know, channel them to the corporations. Okay. Now, when you have a budget that constantly has to pay for the expense of something but doesn't get the financial benefit of the result, you know, you're on a spiral down. One example. Another example is revenues come in, tax revenues come in, but money's being stolen. So as I said, $4 trillion went missing, and we're in violation of the constitutional requirements and the financial laws and regulations regarding financial management. Money's going out the back door through the black budget. Okay, so the baby boomers saved and saved and saved, and they build up money and they build up money and build up money, but the money's disappearing out the back door. We're back to this milk bucket problem with a hole in the bottom. Okay, and then so suddenly they say, well, there's no money. You need to put more milk in the milk bucket. Well, wait a minute. You know, where's the $40 trillion? Let's get it back. Okay, so this fiscal cliff idea could go on and on in these issues because there's several others like that. But we're dealing with a situation where the budget is a tiny, weird construction of a financial ecosystem. And to find real solutions, we've got to step back and look at the whole financial ecosystem. So let me give you another example. If you look at the speed at which the Medicare, Medicaid budget is compounding, you know, within short order, it's going to take up the entire GNP of the country and bankrupt us. Now, if you look at the movie, the documentary Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, and you look at trucker Phil Staples, who goes from being a person with terrible health who needs tremendous amounts of drugs and medical help and problems to somebody who's unbelievably healthy, doesn't need any medical treatments, doesn't need any drugs, you know, is healthy as a clam. You know, that is a tiny microcosm of the bigger problem, which is you have a population that is dying of lack of nutrition. They're being poisoned. They have very unhealthy lifestyles. And so they're sickly in a serious way, and that if you try and address their sickliness with health care and drugs, it's not going to solve anything because you're trying to address the symptoms and not the problem. But addressing the symptoms is an unbelievably expensive endeavor, okay? So health care problem number one, or financial problem number one, is Americans are eating poison and they have an unhealthy lifestyle. Okay, well, you know, that's problem number one. Number two, we have all these medical cures and all these different ways of making people healthy that has been suppressed. Okay, Rife technology has been suppressed. All these other, you know, if you read Suzanne Summers' wonderful book, Knockout, you read all the different cancer cures that have been poo-pooed and suppressed, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, well, one of the reasons those stuff has been suppressed is they're cheap. You know, they put the pharmaceutical companies out of business. Okay, so fiscal problem number two, you've got to unsuppress the technology. Fiscal problem number three, you have an entire industry that is not subject to market economics. They've all been running to Washington and getting special deals. We pay 10 to 20% times more for a given drug than people in New Zealand or Mexico or Canada. You know, at this level of monopoly pricing, there are no solutions. So number three, the entire healthcare industry has got to get subject to market economics. Big shakeout, okay? So, and number three, we're going to have to look at the issue of, you know, how much money do I want to spend for me to sit around in a nursing home and be a vegetable? Very sensitive discussion, but it's one that's got to be had because it's unbelievably expensive. And you know something, it's a rotten way to live. So if you've ever dealt with it. So those are the healthcare economic issues. They can't be solved by cutting the budget or spending more money. Oh, last one. We need healthcare. We don't need healthcare insurance. We don't need the insurance company. Get the insurance companies out of here. You know, we don't need them. We need healthcare. That's a whole different thing. It'll save a fortune. So the fiscal cliff conversation is a conversation that's being had within the official reality, and there are no solutions within the official reality. We have to leave the official reality and start looking at reality, and that's where solutions lie. That's a very painful process, Bonnie, not just for the top guys, for everybody in America, because we've been lying to ourselves and each other. If you look at all the jobs and employment that comes off of pharmaceuticals, the healthcare industry, you know, all of this, it's not just Mr. Global, it's all of us. We are deeply vested in a system which has not been subject to healthy economics for 70 years, and we have built this cascade of paying people off and paying each other off and solving all our political problems with money because we could just borrow more money. And now we're about to get whacked upside the face. And I assure you, if you look at the money, it's not just Mr. Global, it's all of us. So it's going to be quite a process.
Do you think that they'll actually let the so-called cuts go through? The cuts, and you're saying raising taxes would be part of it as well.
Right. The bigger question is not what happens this time around. Over the next 2 years, you're going to have a radical reengineering of the federal budget. You have to. Here's the last thing. Fear and anger. One of the things I am watching is a significant increase in the general fear and anger of the general population. People are angry and they're scared. And that fear and that anger is clouding their judgment and using up their time and energy. And one of the most important things everyone could do for themselves is to find a way to channel that fear and anger to protect their health and protect their time. When the litigation first started, I feel like I'm watching all of America now go through the process I went through. But when I first started to go through it, I reached a point where I had always thought, you know, that I could manage anything. You know, I have a lot of confidence in my ability to figure things out and come to a positive result on anything. And I reached a point where I thought, oh my God, you know, I might fail. I could die. You know, I'm going down. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see, you know, these incredible lines grow on my face, and my face started to get gray. And I thought, I'm going to turn, you know, into charcoal here. And I thought, okay, I need to figure out who's been through this process before and who made it and who didn't and why. I need to really study this because I'm in trouble. You know, all my little political fixes aren't working. So I went back and I studied, and what I discovered was, you know, this process of sort of swarming and attacking a person legally, financially, in the media, you know, in the court, everything, and physical harassment had happened to many other government officials and business leaders. You know, so this had been done to many people before me. And in fact, I had my attorney write an article called Anatomy of a SWAT to describe all the different tricks, because it's very it's very immersive. They come at you at every angle and all at the same time. And there's whisper campaigns. And I had 18 audits and investigations, 12 pieces of litigation and physical harassment and a media war against me all at the same time. It's very immersive. And so I went back and I studied who made it through and who didn't. And you know what I discovered? People failed and died because they got angry. And their anger made them difficult to work with and deal with. You know, their anger got directed at the people trying to help them, or people who were coming to investigate them who were entirely innocent, who had no idea. And it made them sick. Their own anger made them sick. And so they would burn out either because they offended and scared everybody, or they got sick and died. And what I realized is, oh my God, I cannot afford anger. I can't afford it. It's going to kill me. And the other thing is, I had a very wonderful person who's on our team who helped me to understand anger creates a connection between you and them. If you're angry at a person, you've created an energetic connection with them. And what was very interesting, in the last day, in the last court trial, it was a civil case against Hamilton, and we had absolutely won. We had slaughtered them. They looked, and you had a whole group of people come down from the Department of Justice and different agencies. And it was very funny because 2 days before, two of the attorneys on the other side, the private attorney and the Department of Justice, were having a fight. And one guy said, openly in front of us, and one guy said, "You don't know that that's true." And the other guy said, "Yes, I do. I have a document here. Catherine Austin Fitz said it's true, so it must be true." And I realized things had gotten so bad that the only reason that they knew something was fact, not fiction, was because they trusted me. I mean, it was bizarre. So all these people come down, and we're sitting in the last day, and literally you can hear the hiss in the courtroom. It's like they're swaying. And I could hear it. I could hear this, you know, coming from them. "Why can't we get you? Why can't we get you?" And I realized, you know, I've gone through this whole process. I never thought about them. I never hated them. I never cared about them. You know, to me, they were ordered to get me. You know, I used to pray for them. I didn't feel any anger. I never. And what I realized was there was no connection between them and me, and that's why they couldn't get me. It's a little bit like there's a blue healer in Hickory Valley who's a great dog. When I tell you that dog has a mind in a different dimension, and she'll go out and nip at the horses and bark at the horses, and the horses try and kick her, but they can't reach her because her mind is in a different dimension. She's on a different plateau mentally, and those horses can never kick her. My dog goes out and bark, bam. Wilson is flat out kicked because he thinks the way they do. So I just learned. I had a wonderful church, and I really got trained, and I learned to look at this whole thing spiritually and say, for some reason, you know, the good Lord has decided that I should be separated out. You know, I'm Jonah. I'm being spat out of the whale, and that's, you know, that's his choice. And so I'm going to go with it. It's all good. You know, and I'm being separated out. So let's see where that goes. You know, and somehow in this story, that's going to turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to me. And I just didn't get angry at any of them. I didn't view it that way. And the more evil that some of them could be, the more I would, you know, I would just shake my head because, you know, when you do that kind of evil, it comes back and bites you. It always comes around and bites you. And I just used to shake my head that anybody would bring that karma on themselves. Anyway, but it was lucky. And so what I say when I look at the general population, I see us as a people going to fear and anger in a way which is creating danger for the person who's feeling it. And so I'm not saying that what's happening is right and you shouldn't be angry about it. I'm not saying that it's not prudent to be afraid when there's risk. But we have to find a way to manage and channel that in a way that doesn't make us sick and doesn't put us at risk.
And what about fear? Do you think that's just as destructive?
Yes, because I see fear being used to persuade people to not think clearly about things. So, for example, this fear of collapse is very, very real. And it's persuading people to take action and use their time and money in ways that is against their own self-interest. So I think fear is something properly managed and channeled can make us smart. Fear that we let overrun us can make us very, very stupid and not use our time and money well. We can't live in fear. And it's very easy in this environment to fall into that trap. So we each have to really focus on fear and anger, how we deal with it, because you don't want to shut it off. In other words, fear is my way, my psyche's way of telling me something's wrong, you need to look at this. You know, so you don't want to shut it off. Or anger is my way of knowing something wrong is going on. So these are great navigation tools, and you don't want to turn them off, but you also don't want to give them free rein, because one of the things to remember, the entrainment technology and subliminal programming, I believe, is encouraging lots more fear and anger than would be happening otherwise. So this is a manipulation tool, and that's part of the divide and conquer. Somebody just stole $40 trillion. That included some of your money. You know, get angry at them. But if you're scared of them, don't turn that back against your neighbor, because your neighbor didn't steal the money from you. So,
Catherine Austin Fitz, thank you very much.
Bonnie Faulkner, thank you. This was terrific. Thank you so much for doing this.